Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited, with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
And we begin with the college, I should say with the NFL hiring process, which is the coaches coming to a close. Almost all of the NFL vacancies have been filled. The Jaguars hired Urban Meyer. The Jets hired Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator of the Niners. The Falcons hired Arthur Smith, offensive coordinator of the Titans. Chargers hired Brandon Staley, defensive coordinator of the Rams. And the Lions have inked Dan Campbell to a six-year deal. He was an assistant coach with the New Orleans Saints. There are two openings left. The infamous Houston Texans opening, with whatever is happening around Deshaun Watson, and the Eagles, who got a late jump on this by firing Doug Peterson late in the process. So what have we learned about the NFL amongst the head coaching carousel that turned again this year? It is where we begin, your cold open.
Whether it's watching film, whether it's studying a roster, whether it's understanding the salary cap, what we have available to us, the number one pick, the fact that I love Jacksonville, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Florida, my family loves it here, and then, you know, quite honestly, Duvall and 904 deserve a chance to go win. And I'm gonna hire people that want to help the Jaguars win.
Any job you take, I mean, we all take those risks, and I'm excited. And you know, there's always unknown, and but it's constant. You know, I don't want to be the same coach today that I am in 2022 and 2023. And we're constant trying to improve and grow in this job.
I don't believe it.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Those two voices were two of the guys hired. That was Urban Meyer and Arthur Smith. Smith again in Atlanta. Here's what we've learned about the NFL head coaching cycle. Is that right now, it is of value to have never been a head coach before. You look at all of the names that I just cited, and none of them have previous NFL head coaching experience. And only Urban Meyer has significant head coaching experience. What you see is a theme here building, and that is NFL GMs and NFL owners are looking for the young, new, fresh voice. And Urban Meyer might be the biggest name, and he might not be young, but he absolutely is a fresh voice in the NFL. Here's what happened. The NFL GMs and the NFL owners have seen young head coaches, first-time head coaches specifically, have success right away, and they have gone and doubled down on it. So if you are Marvin Lewis, if you are Jim Caldwell, if you are any of those retread coaches that have had experience in the NFL before, need not apply. You're looking at a couple of guys in the NFL that changed around the fortunes of their franchises very quickly and were first-year head coaches, and that has now colored everybody's decision-making around the NFL. Brian Flores in Miami. Sean McDermott in Buffalo, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland. These guys walked in and day one took a losing situation and made them winners. You can put Joe Judge into this category. because even though the Giants ended up 6-10, it was obvious how much the Giants changed because of their new head coach. And this is now what all of these owners are chasing. This is what all of these owners are trying to replicate. They don't want the guys that have been around before. They don't want the guys, and you know what? Mike McCarthy didn't help matters. McCarthy was one of the most decorated former coaches that were in these cycles the last 2 years, and his Cowboys didn't look like they benefited at all by having him. At all. They looked like they were worse for it. If you're a head coach and you've had head coaching experience before, you are right now being pushed to the borders, pushed to the boundaries. When I look at the hires around the NFL, I also see, again, a heavy reliance on offense. And that's to be expected. You are looking at a heavy reliance on offense when it comes to Arthur Smith. When it comes to hoping that you can get that quarterback to the next level, that next coordinator. But this year, more than others, it's less about offense or defense. It's more about young guy, come in, be the whiz kid. That's how Brandon Staley gets his job. That the Chargers were looking for the Sean McVay of defense. And Staley had 3 years in the NFL and 1 year as a coordinator. The Jets are looking at Robert Saleh not to fix Sam Darnold, but to change the culture of their organization. In Detroit, Dan Campbell doesn't even have a specialty. Dan Campbell's not a coordinator. But Dan Campbell's seen as potentially a leader of a locker room, a culture builder. Urban Meyer admits, I'm not going to run myself ragged in practice. I'm going to hire assistant coaches. And so Urban Meyer is there, whether we believe him or not, to build a culture, but not necessarily be in the muck, the weeds of the X's and O's. This is where this year's coaching cycle took us. The most curious part about all of this is Eric Bieniemy not having a head coaching job, because there were multiple openings. He interviewed for all of them, essentially. He is potentially a first-year head coach, and he does have the offensive background. So that would seem to check a lot of boxes. Why isn't Bieniemy hired? It's beyond me. Does he interview well? His agent says he does, although that's his agent. Is it because that people don't believe that he has control in that offense, that anybody can do it? Well, Doug Peterson got a job out of that offense, and Matt Nagy got a job out of that offense. Is it because Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson kind of showed that Andy Reid assistants might not have all that great of a track record? Maybe. Maybe those two guys hurt Eric Bieniemy. Maybe they just don't believe that Eric Bieniemy has whatever secret sauce is for the rest of these guys. You would hope it's not the color of his skin, but there's plenty of people in the NFL that are suggesting otherwise. But the fact is that if you followed the tea leaves, Bieniemy checks all the boxes that I just mentioned of what's hot right now in the NFL and doesn't have the job. Now, maybe he gets one of the last two remaining. Maybe he gets the Eagles job. Maybe he gets the Texans job. Who knows? But there's a couple of very obvious themes going on. And right now, people want the quick fix that they see coming from the young culture changers that have happened to the NFL the last couple of years. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. Or on Twitter, DA on CBS. But I want to do a little history here, NFL history, which you guys know that I love to do. Mraz, let's go back to 1993, because Chiefs and Bills, the last time the Bills were in this spot, the AFC title game, was 1993. And before this Patrick Mahomes run, that was the last time the Chiefs were in the AFC title game. So there's a lot of good vibes from the early 90s bubbling up in Kansas City this weekend. In 1993, what were you doing?
1993, that summer, I learned how to swim at 6 years old on my first ever trip to Florida. And I proceeded, I remember distinctly, for these are the first NFL playoffs, I actually remember sitting on the couch with my father. And in fact, I could tell you, I remember I was started to be allowed to reach my own hand into potato chips that January as well.
Now, that's interesting. You were not allowed to take your own potato chips until the age of six. You remember having your hand slapped away?
Well, yes, because I was a young, portly kid. But if you remember, D.A., that year, the Giants had a pretty magical year themselves. So I remember Giants-Vikings wildcard weekend, and it's distinctly remembered, as my parents have always joked around since, the 1993 Giants playoffs is where I became a real pig because I learned how to feed myself out of a chip bag.
Interesting, yes. The 93 Giants had a bit of a magical run. After Parcells had retired after the 1990 Super Bowl, they went 8-8 and 6-10 with the disaster known as Ray Handley. They brought in Dan Reeves, who had been fired in Denver for being unable to get over the hump for the Broncos, and he immediately restored solid respectability to the Giants, and they nearly nabbed the number one seed of the NFC. We'll talk more about that coming up here. So here was the world in 1993, okay? I was a 14-year-old. I think that was ninth grade for me, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Ninth grade. Yeah, 1993, 14-year-old DA. Here is what is happening in the world in 1993, okay? The big hit song is Mariah Carey's Dream Lover. Bum, ba-da-da-da-da-da. Ooh. Baby, baby. Remember that song?
I do remember that song. I'm a big Mariah Carey fan, and I love playing a 90s station on my Sirius XM from time to time, and that comes on often.
Mm-hmm. Dream Lover, the number one song that year. The number one movie that year, Jurassic Park 1.
Is that right?
That is right.
I would have thought Jurassic Park was more of like a 96, 97. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, 93, the first Jurassic Park. This might stir some memories here for some of our listeners. In 1993 for the Super Bowl, this was the Cowboys and Bills, the second one. The game was on CBS, I believe. Yes, it was on CBS. At that time, In Living Color was one of the biggest shows on TV. Of course, it had launched the career of the Wayans brothers, Damon Wayans, Jim Carrey, etc. Fox was not a NFL rights holder. So they tried to go rogue during Super Bowl halftime. During halftime, they put on an In Living Color special. It was synced up live with the moment that they went to commercial break for halftime, and then they wrapped it up so that viewers could flip back over. So that really doesn't happen much anymore for the networks. You might see that on cable. I don't know. I feel like there's like a puppy bowl that goes on, like the Animal Planet or something
and,
like
and
that.
And MTV with Beavis and Butthead forever.
Yeah, but that doesn't happen anymore either.
No. But that was back in the day. That was what they did at halftime.
And what's amazing is, well, maybe that was 92. Either way, it changed everything because once Fox did this, the next year, I think the next year was 93, the NFL brought in Michael Jackson for the halftime so that people couldn't flip away from the halftime show. So that changed how dramatic and huge and star-studded the halftime shows then became. Interesting, right?
I did not realize that's what made the turn.
That's what made the turn. Also, if you're just wondering what was happening in sports at that time, the Toronto Blue Jays were back-to-back World Series champions. Of course, the last time they had won the World Series. In the NBA, that was the third championship of Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls of the first three-peat, beating Charles Barkley and the Phoenix Suns in that classic. In 1993, Mraz, the Montreal Canadiens are the Stanley Cup champions, as we famously know. The last Canadian Stanley Cup.
Amazing. Beating Wayne Gretzky and the Kings. Wayne Gretzky had gotten the Kings to the Stanley Cup that year.
That's exactly right, yeah. That's the Marty McSorley curved stick controversy. How about this as well? You'd be very proud of Dave Thomas. I know that you're a big Dave Thomas fan, the founder of Wendy's, the late, great Dave Thomas. In 1993, he went back to high school to get his GED because he was worried that his success running the Wendy's franchises as a high school dropout might convince other teenagers to quit school.
Wow, so me and Dave Thomas actually had a lot in common. Very uneducated and backed our way into some success. And back then, DA, I remember distinctly being a big fan of around 93, 94 is the time I learned to dip a French fry in a Frosty in the yellow labeled Wendy's as well.
And is that not a game changer when you realize the French fry and the Frosty trick?
Oh. Oh, you kidding me? It was like, wait a minute now, wait a minute. This isn't ketchup, but it's still delicious.
Now, wait a minute. Ice cream, fried potatoes. This works.
And I've often made the jokes about the 2000s and the ranch dressing boom. Think about it. Now you might do a little French fry and ranch dressing. Before that, you were dipping your French fries in Frosties. It was a crazy time.
It was a crazy
now,
time.
Now, wait a minute.
Crazy. You might not remember this, but Chevy Chase had his ill-fated Chevy Chase talk show, which lasted 6 weeks.
I do.
Billy Joel's River of Dreams, his last original album, came out in 1993. And the cover of that album was painted by his wife at the time, Christy Brinkley. It was named the best album cover of the year by Rolling Stone.
That's a nice touch. Good job by Christy. I'm sure Billy obviously showed he appreciated it.
The 1993, the first year of Coachella, when the band Pearl Jam boycotted Ticketmaster for high prices. And so upon the boycott, they started this renegade music festival called Coachella.
Wow. I'm sure there was no weed smoke there at all.
Mm-hmm. Also, Mattel introduced a new Ken for Ken and Barbie, and it was Earring Magic Ken, where Ken wore blonde highlights, a purple shirt, a lavender vest, a necklace with a charm, and an earring in his left ear. I don't remember this.
I don't either, but I'm sure a lot of parents were thrilled to buy it.
And from a sports standpoint, this was the year of Jim Abbott's dramatic no-hitter, which we talked about over the summer, how incredible that moment really is in history, that somebody with one hand could pitch not only in Major League Baseball regularly as a starter, but he threw a no-hitter. Incredible.
Right. I could also tell you that 10 days after this AFC title game, first time I had a whole cotton candy stick to myself and got it all over myself, and then basically had to shower an hour and a half later. It was ridiculous.
It is just remarkable how you have so many very specific benchmarks in your life marked by food, and you know the year. Like 1993 was a huge food year for you. You were allowed to reach into the potato chip bowl for the first time yourself.
Right.
You found French fries dipped in Frosties.
Uh-huh.
And what was the one you just said?
This is cotton candy. I ate the whole cotton candy myself. I bet you if you looked up the date, this is how crazy I am. If you looked up February 2nd, 1994, you will see the Rangers play the Islanders at Madison Square Garden. Adam Graves scored 3 goals. I sat in the upper deck with my dad. He allowed me to get cotton candy, and I was covered in it at 7 years old, covered in it. Embarrassing train ride home, and my mother didn't understand why I had to be thrown into a shower when I got home. Just stickiness everywhere. 10 days after this AFC title game.
Here is how the NFL looked in 1993. The Bills and the Oilers were the best teams in the AFC. They were both 12-4. Only the Bills would end up in the AFC Championship game because Joe Montana did what Joe Montana does. The Chiefs that year had won the AFC West at 11-5. They had to go on the road in the divisional round to Houston. The Oilers were the big favorites. It looked like we were going to get a rematch of the Frank Reich game, Bills Oilers in the AFC title game, and instead Montana goes to Houston, defeats the Oilers, and that sends them to the AFC championship game against the reigning three-time AFC champion Buffalo Bills. In the NFC, it was a down year. The Cowboys ended up at 12-4. They were trying to repeat. The second best team of the NFC was the Giants, who finished 11-5. This is the famous Emmitt Smith Week 17 game where the separated shoulder at the Meadowlands. The winner of this game is going to have home field advantage in the NFC, the one seed. The loser is going to be a wild card. It's crazy that I don't know if that's ever happened other than that game. That's what was on the line on that day. Emmitt Smith, with one shoulder, guts his way through the game. The Cowboys end up winning. The Cowboys are the one seed. The Giants are the wild card. The Giants beat the Vikings wild card weekend, but then go to San Francisco divisional round and famously lose 44-3 in Phil Simms and LT's final games. That year, the Lions win the NFC Central. Again, this was a time where the Lions made the playoffs regularly because of Barry Sanders. So this brings us to the AFC Championship game. In the NFC, it was a classic again, Niners and Cowboys for the second year in a row. In the AFC, it was the Bills and the Chiefs. We had Tim Grunhard join us yesterday on the show. Grunny was the center for the Chiefs throughout the 1990s, and this was the first year of Joe Montana coming to Kansas City after the Niners had decided we are going with Steve Young. Here was Grunny reflecting back on the type of Brady-esque aura that Montana originally had in KC.
Well, a little bit what Brady did for Tampa. And, you know, I talked a little bit about that when Brady moved over to Tampa. Some people called and said, hey, well, you know, what did Joe Montana do? What can we expect Brady to do? He brought, he brought a legitimate quarterback with a legitimate chance to give you an opportunity to win. Joe Montana came in with a swagger, came in with confidence, and when he walked into the room, y'all felt like you had an opportunity to win any game that he was in there because of just his experience and the way he carried himself and the way the guy played. And I think you see a little bit of that with Brady now too. So when we walked into Buffalo in that AFC Championship game, we felt we had every chance to win that game, and it just didn't work out.
Didn't work out as the Bills were able to push ahead in the second quarter. It was a tight game of the first quarter, 7-6 after one. Thurman Thomas scores to make it 14-6, and then the Bills open it up at 20-6. In this game, though, Joe Montana suffers a concussion. He gets hit hard, and the Chiefs they lose Montana, and then the game gets away from them. It ends up at 30-13, and the Chiefs, it would take decades to get back to the AFC title game. And this, at this point in time, is an amazing moment of resilience for the Bills because the Bills have now lost three Super Bowls in a row. Three Super Bowls in a row, and they just keep coming back for more. And they end up with the best record of the AFC. And at that time, I think most of us remember, no offense, Bills fans, we did not want to see you in the Super Bowl anymore. You had lost in 1990 on the Scott Norwood kick. Great, young team, fun, they'll be back. You get back in 1991, you lose way worse to Washington. And now it's suddenly like, okay, now they're losers. By 1992, you get back again. This was probably the worst of the four teams because Jim Kelly was very much injured. That's why Frank Reich comes to that game or plays that game for the Oilers or against the Oilers, rather. They get to the Super Bowl. They lose 52-17 to the Cowboys. By 93, nobody wants them there. I know I didn't. No offense, but I did not want to see you guys get your butts handed to you again in the Super Bowl. It felt like, oh man, we got Joe Montana for the Chiefs back in the Super Bowl. Let's do that. And so America's largely rooting for the Chiefs in the AFC title game, and yet it's the Bills yet again showing up. And in the Super Bowl, the Bills actually have a lead at halftime. This is a really earnest, good, solid effort by a team that simply will not die. But in the second half, Emmitt Smith runs wild, collects the MVP. The Cowboys have their second championship, and the Bills have four consecutive Super Bowl losses. That was their final great win of that window of the dynasty in the AFC, was the 1993 AFC Championship game. We go back to the future coming up this Sunday with Chiefs and Bills again in the AFC title game and a chance to go to Super Bowl 55. This will be one of the stupidest trades in NFL history if the Texans trade away a 25-year-old natural-born leader who does everything right in the locker room and the community for draft picks. It'll be the Herschel Walker trade, okay? But reverse. You'll get the draft picks, and you won't build the dynasty, and you'll trade away the big player, and the player won't end up falling on his face. He'll build that franchise into a winner. So it's actually nothing like the Herschel Walker trade. It's such a dumb outcome of this because it is so avoidable. If you're Deshaun Watson and you're frustrated by the health of the organization, by the direction of the organization, by the warring factions of the organization, you know what the organization should do? Fire the team chaplain. It's the easy decision. Jockeying Jack. This guy's riding the owner, Cal McNair, to save his own butt. Riding Cal McNair to hire his friend Nick Caserio so that he won't get fired. Fire jockey Jack Easterby and you'll immediately show Deshaun Watson, we're serious, we mean business. Sit down with Watson, say this is what we did, this is our mistakes, this is how we'll rectify them, we want you here. You don't trade a franchise quarterback at 25 years old. There's not a flaw to Deshaun Watson. You don't trade that guy. But Adam Schefter reports that there's growing sentiment that Deshaun Watson has played his last game for the Houston Texans. And so Richard Sherman, who is, of course, a veteran in the NFL and has played for both the Seahawks and the Niners, said that he thinks Richard Sherman should go to New York and play for his old defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh. He said Deshaun Watson should get to the Jets, quote, as quickly as possible. He told the Chris Collinsworth podcast as a co-host, I'd head right now to New York to the Jets. And he was talking about they've got a decent offensive line. They'd have to add some offensive weapons, but they've got money in free agency. And Richard Sherman with a very funny line, I'd be out of there on the first thing smoking. So I guess that means plane, train, or automobile, or rocket ship. So it's kind of weird, don't you think, Mraz, for anybody that's been in the NFL for any amount of time to say, I'd run to New York. Deshaun Watson has a no-trade clause, so he can argue or angle for wherever he wants to go. If he does not want to go to a place that another team has a bounty for him, he could say, I'm not going to waive my no-trade clause. And so he can angle where he wants to go. If he wants to go to New York, he could say, I'll only waive it for the Jets, and you got to take their offer. I find it surprising, though, after the Jets' near decade of ineptitude, that anybody around the NFL would say, I would run to the Jets. How about you?
Yeah, I find this weird on a number of levels. Number one, just the idea that it is the Jets. And I do think that it was an appealing place because if you are great in New York and win a Super Bowl with the Jets, you will be idolized forever, and I understand that, but that's kind of the case in a lot of places. You could make that case in Detroit as well, but it would be great for marketing and all of that. So it is just bizarre because what kind of world are we living in where people want to be New York Jets? What I also find bizarre is Richard Sherman's not retired, and it just seems a little weird for somebody who's a current player to be commenting on the star and saying he should be running to this place that isn't the team he's currently playing for either. That part of it I find very strange, too.
Do you think that it's irresponsible for a current player in the NFL, Richard Sherman still playing, to be telling other current players you should be trying to basically shoot your way out of town?
Yeah, I think part of it is irresponsible because, right, like when another guy is in contract negotiations on your own team and you're asked about it as a teammate, what is the main prevailing thought? Oh, you don't talk about somebody else's money. You don't talk about somebody else's situation. But because Richard Sherman isn't currently Deshaun Watson's teammate and isn't currently saying he should come play for his own team, it's like he's just commenting where I thought that was a big no-no for players. Don't comment on other guys' situations and basically tell them where they should go, what they should be doing. Don't touch their money. I do find that a little out of place from Richard Sherman. I really do.
Yeah, I do too, and I think it's because that Richard Sherman is already angling for an analyst job. And we've now seen this. This is kind of a modern trend of the NFL and other sports as well. But guys toward the end of their careers realize, let me open up, Let me do more with the media. Let me do weekly interview sessions. Let me do weekly radio shows. Let me do a podcast. He's doing a podcast with Chris Collinsworth that he knows is going to be well downloaded and listened to. And he's going to use that as a jumping off point for when he retires to land one of these studio shows, NFL Network, etc. Joe Thomas did it. Steve Smith did it. A lot of these guys start really doing a lot of media in their final 2 years of their careers. They realize the writing's on the wall. So Richard Sherman's walking this line of already being the media or trying to be. And that's how you get attention. You know, it's like do really good interviews or be a little outlandish when you're still playing when it matters. And then you'll parlay that into a job. So I agree. He's in a murky gray zone right now. And I think as a current player, talking about another current player should leave, go there, is a little weird and awkward. I also think, look, the Jets aren't a good job yet. They're not a good position yet, okay? Robert Saleh might be a good head coach, and I'd like the hire. And the Jets might spend this money well, and they might use the draft picks well. But we don't know that. And so Deshaun Watson running to the Jets right now, I wouldn't say you should run there more than stay in Houston. I agree the Texan situation's a disaster. But the Jets have also been a disaster for a decade. And, let's say outside of the two Rex Ryan years, probably bordering on disaster for most of the last 30 to 40 years. I mean, there's a few good Herm Edwards years, a few good Mangini years, but by and large, you know, it's a disaster. There's a couple of good years with Parcells, but by and large, it's kind of a mess. So suggesting, like, I'd run there, we don't know that that's fixed. There's a good start with Saleh. It's a good hypothetical with the money and the draft pick. It's not fixed yet. Right. And I don't think just Deshaun Watson fixes it either.
Right, and that's why if Richard Sherman, because he played for Saleh in San Francisco as his defensive coordinator, said, hey, look, I think this guy's going to be a really good head coach. If that's where Deshaun Watson ended up wanting to go, I think that would be a good fit for him. I think that's a good leader. But just saying you should run on the first thing smoking out to New York to go play for the Jets, as you said, what world is this? What are we living in? Let's see this first.
Deshaun Watson, if it's the difference between the Jets and the Dolphins, but the Dolphins are a slam dunk, right? And some people have suggested that the Dolphins trade the number 3 pick and Tua Tagovailoa to the Texans. So then the Texans' starting cornerstone quarterback is going to be Tua, and they get their pick back, the number 3 pick, and the Dolphins get Tua, or I should say the Dolphins then get Deshaun Watson. And if you're Deshaun Watson, oh, hell yeah. You're going to a team that nearly made the playoffs already, all young players, a head coach that's already one of the most respected in the NFL. If I'm Richard Sherman and I say he should run to the Dolphins, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm in on that. Run to the Jets right now? Little premature.
That being said, D.A., real quickly, if he runs to the Jets and you get the Sean Watson with the Jets, and you get Miami good and get Buffalo good, that means a win for everybody because that means it's that much more impossible for Bill Belichick to right this ship in New England and win this division.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. There are Patriots fans that just believe, well, this was the anomaly year. We're out of the playoffs and we'll be back. And they're dealing for the first time in 21 years with not making the playoffs. The odds are you're not being back. I mean, you might make the playoffs as a wild card team or something like that, but the odds are that the Patriots are never going to be good again. I mean, I say never, like not for the foreseeable future. That division's going to be hard now, and you have to find a starting quarterback. So, sorry, you might as well be the Colts. You might as well be take your pick of the Jets, take your pick of the teams that need to figure out the Niners. Like, that doesn't just happen. You've got to really hit on something, and everything has to break your way with the rest of your roster. I think this is the new reality for the Patriots, and I'm not crying about it, that's for sure. Andrew Bogish has your headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
DA, good morning again. So it's certainly nice that 8th-ranked Houston avenged its only loss of the season last night, routing Tulsa 86-59. The Cougars had lost to the Golden Hurricane right after Christmas. It's also cool that Providence upset number 11 Creighton 74-70, sure, and that Georgia Tech took down number 20 Clemson 83-65. But none of those teams are 15-0.
Vaudrin at the top of the key. He'll fire a triple. Yes! 43-28. Now, wait a minute. The Eagles closing in on a 15-0 start to the year and 20 consecutive victories. Up 43-28, 100 seconds into the second half.
Feeling good, doing well.
Oh, yes, they
wow.
are.
Chandler, that is Vaudrin. Great.
Yes.
Wow. Then now what?
Wait a minute.
And that one awesome. Actually works. Like, that one fits in the flow. That's a good one you yeah. could actually use, I think, game in and game out if you're stupid.
Now,
Dave.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
It fits a little bit better than asking, do they have good burgers and turkey?
True.
Well, the bigger question is, do they have good burgers?
Right.
Right.
These guys were like Abbott and Costello yesterday. So you had Dave Friedman, who's our Super Dave, and you had Mike Pacheco, who's his color analyst on the Winthrop basketball broadcast. They shoehorned every damn drop into that two-hour broadcast they possibly could, even if it made sense or not. They
right.
were all-stars. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. And now, wait a minute, is perfect.
Now, wait a minute.
I wish we could have been in the production meeting as they kind of figured out where exactly. they're going to squeeze in some of these ones.
Exactly. That's right. I need the behind-the-scenes Friedman bringing Pacheco the list and explaining to him what was going to happen on this broadcast. That's
how are
you
going to get good burgers in? How about you tell your turkey story, and I'll ask if there's good burgers in Istanbul. Would that work?
What the hell does where does assault mean?
And it's not like, as you just said, it's not like this is a bad basketball team where they're just playing out the string for a right. garbage season. They're 15-0. They're a perennial tournament team. These are big games, and they're working in where does the salt go? And now, wait a minute. And by the way, it gets more and more ridiculous. We're going to keep playing more of these drops throughout the show. I mean, by the end of this game, it is utter insanity what they are trying to pull off.
And this game, by the way, it was a 78-66 win over Presbyterian. So the Eagles are 15-0 overall. They're 12-0 in the Big South, and they've won 20 straight going back to last season. In the NBA, the T-Wolves had a two-point lead in the final seconds on the Magic, and they had Jared Vanderbilt at the line for two clinching free throws. He missed the first, and then
his second shot is no good. Rebounded by Anthony. 2 seconds left. Anthony for the win.
Got
he throws it. Cole Anthony gives the Magic a victory. Improbable. Unbelievable.
That is David Steele on Magic wow. Radio. Cole Anthony, buzzer beating three. And if you don't know, that's Greg Anthony's kid. Orlando stealing a 97-96 victory from the T-Wolves. The Nets lost their first game with Kyrie, Durant, and Harden, 147-135 in double OT in Cleveland. Colin Sexton scored 15 in that final period alone, 42 for the game. The Clipper win streak is 5 after a 115-96 decision over the Kings. Joel Embiid, 42 points and 10 boards, and the Sixers, 117-109, went over the I wrote Bruins, but I think I meant Celtics. And the Mavs snapped the three-game slide, 124-112 in Indy. Kristaps Porzingis, 27 points and 12 boards. The NBA has reminded teams about the rules for in-game interactions, with COVID still a huge problem for the league. League security will now be at midcourt pregame and halftime to keep an eye on things. Players are limited to fist or elbow bumps, no high fives, no hugs, and only quick chats with opponents. Patrick Mahomes did basically everything at Chiefs practice yesterday, but officially just a limited participant because he remains in concussion protocol. And because they're the Bears recently interviewed Mike Singletary for defensive coordinator. He, of course, is one of their greats. trades, but has not had an NFL job since 2016. Since then, he's been a failed Alliance coach and a failed high school coach. So let's bring him back to coach the Bears defense in 2022, whatever. Larry Scott is done as Pac-12 commissioner at the end of this June. His contract was to run through June of 2022. Veteran lefty Jay Happ reportedly signing with the Twins. And the NHL has fined the Washington Capitals $100,000 because four players hung out in a hotel room without masks. Alex Ovechkin was one of them. All four now on the team's COVID list. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. I want this very clear. I really respect Mike Singletary, okay? Mike Singletary's Hall of Fame linebacking career is one of the great in history. There is Butkus. There is Singletary. There is Urlacher. These are all-time Bears legends at linebacker. And not only is Singletary a Pro Football Hall of Famer and the linchpin of the 85 Bears defense, perhaps the greatest of all time, he's a College Football Hall of Famer. But as a coach, he's left a lot to be desired. And what happened, remember, Mraz, when we did the Alliance, it was Pete the Body, of course, who adopted the Memphis Express. And I believe it was because he liked the logo. Now, we based all of our decisions that year on the logos. Mm-hmm. I went Arizona Hotshots. You went Orlando Apollos. Pete went Memphis Express. And of course, Pete's luck, the Express turned into an absolute abject disaster. They are the embarrassment of the Alliance within the first 2 weeks of the season. And they are led by who else? Mike Singletary.
And as Bogus pointed out, I think the next 2 years he went to coach a high school and I think won a combined one game over 2 years. You're Mike Singletary. It's high school. You can't win one game over 2 years.
Yay, football.
He was the head coach at Trinity Christian Academy, and I believe you're right. I believe he won one game in 2 years and had to resign.
They were 1-21. He couldn't even scare the other team into losing to his guys.
Stick to the card shows there, Mike.
And now the Bears are like, let's see what he's got. Let's see what he's thinking. So, Mike, tell us about Trinity Christian Homecoming 2019. What did you guys have going on right there? Do you think that'll help us against Aaron Rodgers or the Packers? Now, wait a minute, Mike Singletary. You don't go anywhere.
Wait a minute.
I want to hear all about homecoming against Valley and how you guys lost 63-3.
Yeah. Couldn't stop AC Slater.
So how did AC Slater run 7 onside kicks successfully in a row on you guys to beat you by 60 points of that game, Mike?
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Your best audio of the day starts with the GM of the Browns, Andrew Berry, on the Browns offense last year, seemingly improving when Odell Beckham went down with injury. Here's Berry.
Our offense just evolved over the course of the year. I think part of that is just chemistry, time on task, you name it. I think that's really independent of Odell. I've said, multiple times, Odell's a good football player. He acclimated nicely with our program, with Kevin, with his teammates. And quite honestly, I just want as many good football players on the roster as possible. He's dynamic.
So I think there is truth there that the Browns offense needed time, needed experience together. As they made their way through the season, they understood their responsibilities more, became more of an accountable type of offense where they understood what needed to be done to execute the game plan, and that helps. And so that just is going to happen with or without Odell Beckham. I think there are two other truths here, though. The Browns realized they don't need Odell Beckham to be successful. They made their way all the way to a divisional round playoff game. They made their way to a playoffs and absolutely slaughtered their arch nemesis, the Steelers. The the Cleveland Browns can go into next season understanding if Odell Beckham is not part of this puzzle, they're going to be just fine. Because I don't think anybody thinks that this was just a one-off year for the Cleveland Browns. That's the first truth. The other truth is that there may have been at least a small part of this where Baker Mayfield is not distracted or consumed by needing to get Odell Beckham the football. Perhaps Kevin Stefanski also allocating more time than he should to one player to try to get him involved. Or the simple fact that Odell Beckham is a temperamental type of guy. He is high maintenance. Now, I don't know if he was on a daily basis within those walls. I'm not sure if he's bending the ear of Baker Mayfield saying, get me the football. I'm not sure if the coaching staff is like, hey, we got to get Odell the football to just keep him emotionally engaged. I'm not sure if he's knocking on the GM's door and saying, you got to get me the football. I don't know that. But what I do know is there is an absolute possibility that when you just take that out of the equation, it clarifies everything. It simplifies everything, and it allows everybody to just go back to basics. And so I don't think it's coincidental that the Browns were better when Odell Beckham went down. Here is Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians on potentially playing in 20 degrees weather with snow showers on Sunday in Green Bay.
I don't really consider 28 degrees cold. I grew up in the north. We got a lot of guys that played in Green Bay and played from in colleges up north. The weather won't affect the ball game, I don't think, at all.
We'll see. I mean, it's easy to say that. You have to say that this week. You can't say, oh, yeah, we don't want to play in the snow, you know. Brady also has been a very good cold weather quarterback, won a lot of games there in the cold weather, rather, in Foxborough. So that part of it, you know, you feel like maybe you'd be able to navigate, but it's certainly going to benefit the Packers because it's their home field. Aaron Rodgers has played in snow showers and Lambeau grass conditions many, many times. And the Packers' offense is just better. It's a better offense than the Buccaneers' offense is. The Buccaneers need turnovers. The Buccaneers need short field like they had against the Saints. They need mistakes by the Packers. The snow might lead to those mistakes, and so that could benefit the Buccaneers, but I don't think that the snow is equal footing for both. I do think advantage Green Bay if there's snow and it's a muddy field. And finally, here is John Harbaugh, head coach in Baltimore, about the offseason suggestions that the Ravens need to find wide receivers for Lamar Jackson.
I'm not going to beg anybody to be here. You know, I'm not a college coach, and I don't have to recruit anybody. You know, you want to win? You want to win? You want to be a part of a great organization, and you want to be a part of a team? And you want to love coming to work every single day, and you're a football player, and you love football, you want to play in the AFC North, you know, come here. If you don't, if you're all about stats and numbers and your stat line and how many balls you catch necessarily, and that's all you care for, then there's a lot of other teams you can go play for, and we'll be looking forward to lining up against you.
So I understand that from Harbaugh. That's a pragmatic way to look at things. I don't have to sell my program to anybody. Easy to sell, although he did just list off the things that he would sell. You know, play in the AFC North, you want to be part of a winner, blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't mean that every wide receiver is going to be high maintenance. It doesn't mean that every wide receiver that's going to be productive needs to have X number of footballs thrown to him. Just draft the right guy that doesn't care about that. You draft the right guy that is talented but, you know, doesn't necessarily need X number of targets. There are plenty of diva wide receivers, but there are plenty of wide receivers that just also want to be part of a winner. And Stephon Diggs is a guy that pretty obviously has wanted to be a winner, and the numbers have been there. But there's been a bond between him and Josh Allen that is indisputable. And while many of us thought maybe that Stephon Diggs was only about his own numbers, it feels like that it was more about being part of a quarterback relationship that he really trusted. And very clearly, Kirk Cousins wasn't that. And maybe the fallout between him and the Vikings also colored that. But there's plenty of wide receivers you can draft that are not going to be worried right away about their targets. So that's where the Ravens need to go in April. And that is your sound check. Standing by with our headline this morning is Andrew Bogish, and Bogues' headlines have become must-listen to more than usual this morning because of the Winthrop scores and highlights. Mr. Bogues, take it away.
DA, the Green Bay Packers were an NFC best 13-3 during the regular season, so they get to host the conference title game on Sunday. The Bucs are the 5 seed, had the 4th most wins in the conference, and they're right where they belong too, according to TB12.
It's how it should be, you know. The two best teams in the conference should be getting together and seeing how it all goes down. And I'm excited
now,
for it.
I know they beat the Saints, and I know the Seahawks had their issues, but did we all think the Bucs were the second best NFC team when this all began?
No, because they didn't have the second best record in the NFC, and they got pounded by the Saints twice. So how can you argue that they're the second best team?
No. In fact,
well, you can, I guess, if you're Tom Brady.
We never brought this up, but at the end of the year, before that Lions game, Michael Irvin at halftime, when talking about the Bucs clinching a playoff spot, said that the Bucs overachieved, which is the polar opposite. Overachieving. I think everybody thought the Bucs were making the playoffs this year, no?
I think we thought the Bucs would make the playoffs. I don't think many of us thought they'd make it to the NFC Championship.
No, but that's my point. I don't think they're the second best team, but I also think there's a middle ground between acting like this is also some surprise. I think a lot of people thought when Brady signed, here come the Bucs, and they're going to be a powerhouse in the NFC.
Well, yeah, expectations for Brady were too high for some. But I think it's better that Brady is acting like they're that good than if he was saying, oh, nobody thought we would be here. Oh, we're the underdogs. Mm-hmm. But let me tell you, this is calculated. This is an interesting thing that we should talk about tomorrow. When Tom Brady has quarterbacked a team that he knew was really good, he played the chip on his shoulder. Nobody believed in this card. When he's playing for a team that might not be as good as his opponent, well, it isn't. He's going to pump them up and say, yeah, we're the second best team, or we're one of the two best teams of the NFC. This is a very clear difference between how he usually handles going into an AFC championship game or an NFC championship game.
Interesting.
Now, it's not exactly the NFC title game, but it's close when one team is unbeaten. Winthrop going for 15-0 against Presbyterian, and they got there, winning yesterday 78-66. The Eagles still perfect because of their strong roster of players that know how to play together.
Running it in the post, and, you know, good spacing, good power, you know, and DJ just takes up so much space there.
Well, he has a weird waist. He's just a big, hulking guy.
Are you saying I have a weird waist?
Well, I mean, I've seen it at various sizes over the years.
Well, you meant DJ. I thought you said...
Yeah, Vaudrin hits the first free throw to go up 54-41. He's just so big.
Yeah.
And Vaudrin is so smart, he knows when to kind of drive off the backside of DJ and use that space and create...
They are off the rails.
Off the rails! Off the rails. They just keep upping the ante. They used I have a weird waist twice in the broadcast.
And they did what I was afraid of. They said a kid had a weird waist. Oh. I think Mike tried to protect it. Like, did I have a weird waist? Like, no. The college basketball player, he's got a weird waist.
He has a weird waist.
Yes. They had to have fist bumped underneath the broadcasting table on that one. Like, yes.
It just had to be this kind of like one-upsmanship between the two of them. Who's going to get in the craziest drop? I mean, I thought they might do two or three of them. I thought it was only going to be Super Dave, and he was just going to weave in two or three of them. They took our entire list of drops, both of them, him and color guy Mike Pacheco, and they just kept doing them throughout the entire game. It was like every call... almost had to be sprinkled with a drop. I mean, how do you work in I have a weird waist?
He has a weird waist.
And with all due respect to Super Dave, Mike is my MVP in this because we knew Super Dave was on board. Mike being gung-ho and even maybe going farther than Dave wanted to go is making this whole thing work so well.
And then where does the salt go?
Mike asked, where does the salt go in the middle of a college basketball game? And again, this is not like some Division III, some type of off-the-radar JUCO. This isn't even finishing out the string, the final game of a season of a losing year. They're 15-0 and leading the Southern Conference and are the favorites again to go to the NCAA tournament. And in the middle of the day, by the way, this is a 5 o'clock start, and it airs in Charlotte.
Okay, so this is Drive Time in Charlotte. Drive Time in Charlotte. These two guys are talking about where does the salt go if there's good burgers and turkey and players with weird waists.
And it gets better.
I mean, and it gets crazier. And it gets crazier.
This is already before we even heard the rest of them, I can tell this is my second favorite color commentary job of all time. Right there with DA's buddy Penns on the flag football broadcast on Facebook.
Mike Pacheco.
Yes. They're neck and neck.
We should get a Pacheco cruiser like the Madden cruiser and just drive him around to the biggest game of the season and just have him do DA show drops.
Like a Pinto.
Oh.
I mean, so how many more of these do we have? We have at least two more, right?
I have one more to play. I was given five. I've played four now through these first three updates. So I have one more left, which is the pseudo final call of the broadcast. But I believe we're finding more as the morning goes on.
Yeah.
If I've sounded distracted at all throughout the show, it's because I've been combing through every minute of this broadcast because I know we missed some. And I've finally at least found one more that we have not played.
Okay. So next hour, we have at least two more. And let me tell you, they're even crazier than any of these other ones. And we'll rank them, all of our favorite ones, on the show as well.
Now, in less important college poops, number 8, Houston dumped Tulsa 86-59. 10th ranked Wisconsin beat Northwestern 68-52. Providence, a 74-70 win at number 11, Creighton. And Georgia Tech hammered number 20, Clemson, 83-65. In the NBA, Kyrie Irving finally joined James Harden and Kevin Durant. The Nets' new trio combined for 96 points, but lost in Cleveland, 147-135 in double OT. Colin Sexton scored 15 of his 42 points in that second overtime. The Warriors blew out the Spurs, 121-99. Phoenix won in Houston, 109-103. And the Sixers outscored the Celtics 117-109. The Pac-12 is moving on from Commissioner Larry Scott after 11 years. His tenure ends this summer, with the conference saying it's time to, quote, bring in a new leader who will help us develop our go-forward strategy. From the NHL, Minnesota 3-2 win in Anaheim. The Oilers a 3-1 win in Toronto. And now we're scorned.
Oh.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Now, I'm not sure this is the best way to get revenge for infidelity, but it is at least entertaining and, I guess, informative. A man and wife spent part of December at the Palms in Turks and Caicos. They were having such a great time that the man flew home to England, I believe, to bring their son back with them so he could join in on the fun they were having at the Palms. However, when dad was away to get the son, something happened. He got back. He said things were weird with his wife, who eventually admitted to sleeping with the masseuse at the hotel while he was gone. So he left this review on TripAdvisor. My wife and I went to this resort. Beautiful resort. Water, sand, pool, and service. Amazing. ... We now know what happened with the masseuse. I am not blaming the resort for this. This is my wife's fault. But just know that this is the thing that can happen at this resort. He gave the Palms 1 out of 5 stars.
So this is the best part about this, okay? Not that this guy's wife cheated on him, but that he wanted to leave a legitimate, credible review. He's like, I want to be fair to the Palms. The water, the sand, the pool, the service, amazing. So I just want you guys to know, it's a really good place. He goes, but when I returned, things seemed awkward. My wife eventually told me that she went to a massage while I was picking up our son, and the masseuse seduced her and spent the night with her. I am not blaming the resort. This is my wife's fault, but just know this is the thing that can happen at this resort.
Yeah, so if you trust your wife, come on down and stay as long as you can. But if she's a little, you know what, be careful.
So here's my problem. I don't think you can give it a one-star review. I mean, honestly.
Well, you got to give him credit for the pool and the water.
Yeah, there's you got to give it a higher review. I mean, is it the resort's fault if the water and the sand and the pool and the service is amazing that the masseuse just happened to seduce your wife? I mean, it sounds like everything was fine besides your wife being unhappy in her marriage.
I'm going to blame this guy for the planning, too. Either you wait until your son is able to come with you, or, sorry, pal, you're home until we get home from vacation. Nobody leaves Turks and Caicos and flies back to England to pick up somebody to come back. It's not like you're driving up the block and doing a bus stop route. No, either you're all in on the trip or you're out, pal. That's it. And being out and picking up this kid led to infidelity.
Something must be going on in the marriage as well, because if you're the wife...
What do you think?
I mean, you just... Don't you just eat it at that point in time? Like, I had my one-night stand with the hot masseuse yes. in Turks and Caicos, and hubby's coming back with my son, and I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to have a glow about me and act as though I just have had the best vacation ever, but I'm not going to tell them. And then he's like, my wife eventually told me that the masseuse seduced her.
Like, did she try to play the victim? Like, I was helpless.
Yeah.
You know, he was Swedish accent. I couldn't stop
His hands were so strong, and the oil was just so, so sensual.
And that's it. Yeah, she's got to live a lie the rest of her life, because now vacations have to be ruined for this guy forever, if they don't stay together. You could never bring another woman
the kid?
To a resort ever again.
Right? How about the poor kid? His parents married but have broken up in glorious Turks and Caicos. Every white sandy beach the rest of his life is going to remind him of this.
Here's Johnny. He's here for a great vacation. Why is mommy so sad? What? Johnny, he had a great flight. He can't wait to go to the beach. Mommy, why are you crying right now? What are you saying? Oh no. Like Johnny like
why
bursts
your
into,
the, over the floor?
Into the suite. And like mommy's like, it's over. I slept with Jorge. He was
Sven.
Amazing.
And you know that there have to be, now that this has gone viral, other couples that have taken the trip where women have gotten massages there, that now there's a lot of infighting all over the world right now. What happened when you got a massage there?
Yeah. Who was it? Who was the masseuse? Who'd you get? Where'd you go? Every woman on this resort right now is like, right. You should go fly home and get our yeah. son. You should, right. You should go... You just
yeah,
take,
I'll have what
take
she's
off.
Having.
Right. Have a couple of days.
The poor husband.
I'm going to stay back, and you guys just...
And every male is gathering
fishing
weapons.
Or something.
The poor husband asking why going. Is it because I have a weird waist?
This is awesome. And that is your Stunned Tua News. Coming up, we'll have more, as I mentioned before, on Super Dave and Mike Pacheco's Winthrop basketball drops. Just the kings of all drops. Just absolute brilliance. But when we come back, why? Well, with Kyrie Irving coming back, what did we learn about the Nets in his return in a double overtime loss to the Cavs? DA, CBS Sports Radio. Schmitty is in California here on the phones on CBS Sports Radio as we were debating Phillip Rivers Hall of Fame candidacy. Schmitty, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, DA. I'm doing good. Just trying to catch my breath. I got to first say, I love listening to you guys. DA, Mraz, I wake up at 5 every single day to do my run, and I cannot wait to put you guys in my ears. It's a blast.
Appreciate that,
but
man.
But you guys have been riding Phillip Rivers for 2 days now. And yesterday was okay, but coming back to it again today, let me get through my 3 points real quick. Won't take up too much time, all right?
Okay.
I have been a Chargers fan for a very long time now. And Phillip Rivers is the only jersey I carry in my closet. Let me give you these 3 points of why he could be a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
First, and no particular order. First, we've got Phillip Rivers in the AFC Championship game. Yes, he has Antonio Gates. Yes, he has LaDainian Tomlinson. How many snaps did LaDainian Tomlinson even take in that game?
Okay, so you're going to say put him in the Hall of Fame for one game, a run to the AFC title game in 07.
No. I'm going to compare.
I know he had torn ACL. I get it.
Okay, yeah, but you're comparing to his peers. I'm going to take the second point is taking Dan Marino. No, I'm not going to compare the two. But how many Super Bowls did Dan Marino get to? One. He didn't even win that one. Phillip Rivers almost got there. He almost did. How hard is it to even get there? And Dan Marino didn't even win one, and he only ever got there one
time. So we're not comparing Marino to Phillip Rivers, but you're saying compare them because Marino only got to one Super Bowl.
No, I'm not comparing them. I'm comparing the difficulty of the game itself.
Okay.
You take these great quarterbacks, yes, and I have been a Chargers fan through some blunders of interceptions, but I'm not going to dissect every single interception. I'm talking main points. Yes.
Okay.
It wasn't
and number three?
Number three, Mraz. Oh, my God. Are you going to tell me that it's an insult to put him on the same ballot as Drew Brees? Drew Brees, you go ask Drew Brees what kind of player Phillip Rivers is. Ask his peers. Don't ask some chubby checker who thinks a pigskin is something you can eat. Okay? I don't even want to hear it from that guy. Man, he can't even laugh without choking up a bone. This guy doesn't even know how to run down the street and check his mailbox without checking his heart rhythm every 2 seconds. Don't even tell me about nothing about athletes. Okay. That's it. Love you guys.
All right. Peace. Thank out. You, Schmitty. Appreciate the phone call. Mraz just
well,
got taken couple, down by Schmitty a little bit.
A couple quick hitters. Number one, your name is Schmitty. Who's still named Schmitty? Number two, he was out of breath as he was insulting me, and he's knocking me for being out of breath. Number three, run down the street to my mailbox. I hate to break it to you. I don't live on some huge farm. It's right outside my front door. Number four, yes, I do think pigskin sometimes can be eaten, so he had some valid points. But it's still an insult. He's not as good as Drew Brees. He can't go in the same day to him as the Hall of Fame.
Pete the Body, how much did you enjoy Schmitty's takedown of Mraz there?
I thought it was a very thorough call.
Of course.
Suddenly, Pete likes answering those phones.
I think there was a Pete Plant.
That was great. So yesterday, you had the Winthrop Eagles, the broadcast team of Dave Freeman and Mike Pacheco, have called games forever. Freeman's been the voice of Winthrop, he said, for 14 or 15 years when he joined us yesterday. So he's got credibility, man. The Winthrop community loves him. He's an excellent broadcaster. And he lost the bet to Mraz this year because of the college football versus NFL picks. So he had to use our drops in the play-by-play. And it was way better than we could have ever even imagined. Let's start here with Bogus's final update, and he'll play the final two clips. And then we'll rank them on the back end, and maybe Pete the Body, you can cue up the music, a little parlor music for us as we do it. So, Bogues, take it away.
Guys, these headlines are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit Progressive.com. Gonzaga and Baylor get all the attention and all the top 25 votes, but neither one of them is 15-0.
That's right.
19-14. This game has been back and forth. Winthrop had the 10-2 lead. Then it was 14 all, and now 19-14 Winthrop.
He looked at McCormick and said, "You like that, big boy?" That was a power move by Telford.
A somewhat slow start for our Eagles at Presbyterian, but as Super Dave told us yesterday, it's tough to battle an entire religion. The Eagles did eventually fly away.
Zunick, left side, Baudrin, thought about a 4-3 today, instead goes inside, Claxton, slam, dunk! If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more! 78-63 Eagles, Winthrop is going to win a 20th consecutive game.
Oh my goodness.
Love tacos, though it's not Tuesday. How about with making...
Oh, a curtain call from Dave Friedman and Mike Pacheco.
My, that... I am Tim Robbins in Shawshank Redemption, shirtless, looking up to the sky with the rain falling down on me. That is the most incredible final call ever. And frankly, I think it should become his signature when Winthrop wins.
there's no doubt. And, D.A., it should be noted behind the scenes when we were trying to figure out what drops we wanted Super Dave to use, Pete hammered home the tacos drop. We all told him, there's no way Dave could get that in, Pete. It's too long. You're wrong. We can't put that in there. And, in fact, yesterday, as we were live texting each other, I said the only thing is, you know, Pete's going to be ticked off when he doesn't do the tacos thing. And Friedman lands the final call with it.
That's outrageous. I sent Friedman a master list of all of our drops. And I said, look, if you get a few of these in, that'd be great. We're going to assign some point totals to them. And I put in the tacos knowing he would never get to the tacos because it's utterly insane to say that in the middle of a basketball game. And yet he did it. Can we play this one more time? That gave me so much joy. This is one of the great moments, I think, in DA show history. Super Dave yesterday on the Winthrop broadcast.
Zunick, left side, Baudrin, thought about a 4-3 today, instead goes inside, Claxton, slam dunk! If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more! 78-63 Eagles, Winthrop is going to win a 20th consecutive game. 55.
Who doesn't like tacos?
Love tacos, though it's not Tuesday.
How about with bacon?
Pacheco just dropping in, perfect exclamation point to the whole call. These two are amazing.
And he says, and then Mike says at the end, how about with bacon? I mean, he slips in. They're outrageous.
Oh, that's what he said. I thought he said, how about we make them?
How about with bacon?
I mean, these guys, this is the new Buck and Aikman. I'm sorry. These guys are incredible.
If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more.
Yeah, if they're not calling the Big South title game, no matter who's in it, then the Big South's doing something wrong.
This is incredible. This is Michaels and Collinsworth of the Big South.
And with all due respect, move over, Mark Johnson. I think if you ain't making tacos, I don't love you no more is better than call the Boulder Fire Department. I think it just is.
I think you're right. Man, if I know, you know, There's Wayne Larrivee in Green Bay has, that's the dagger. Every time that the Packers have some type of win in their sights, the big play is the dagger play. To me, every time Winthrop now seals a win, it has to be, if you don't make tacos, I don't love you no more.
Oh, please, please let that live on.
And frankly, if SportsCenter was aware of this, wouldn't they play this as one of the great clips of the week? Like, this should be one of their top 10 plays. This should definitely get viral run.
Yeah, and maybe it's my job as the producer of this show to make sure I push it out and try to get it to be viral.
I think so.
If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more.
I mean, we got to alert the masses on this. This is incredible. They took it to the totally next level. Oh, my God. They're the best.
How about with bacon?
Well, he has a weird waist.
Oh, my God. They're the best.
So they did win yesterday, Winthrop, 78-66 at Presbyterian. Again, they are 15-0 this season. Number 8, Houston, just 12-1 after beating Tulsa, 86-59. And number 10, Wisconsin, is 12-3 after a 68-52 decision over Northwestern. Larry Scott's 11-year tenure as Pac-12 commissioner ending this June. Even though his contract ran till the following one, the conference says it is time for a new voice to take them into the future. In the NBA, Colin Sexton scored 15 points in the second overtime, 42 total, as his Cavs ruined the Nets' first game with Kyrie, Harden, and Durant, 147-135. Joel Embiid with 42 points and 10 boards in the Sixers, 117-109 win over the Celtics. The Heat beat the Raptors in Tampa, 111-102. The Warriors smacked the Spurs, 121-99, and the Clippers took care of the Kings.
Leonard driving right, gets in the body of Halliburton. Oh! Kawhi Leonard climbs the ladder for a major Kawhi light. Big time slam for the Claw to make it 101-88. He's got 30.
Noah Eagle, Clippers Radio. Kawhi scored 32 in the 115-96 final.
Wait a second, was that Noah Eagle or Ian?
I said the same thing.
No, it's Noah.
Whoa, that you're playing that and I'm thinking that was the Clippers on national TV, and that was an Ian call. That's amazing. Noah sounds so much like Ian, and this is Noah's 23, I think. This is only his second season with the Clippers. Right. That's incredible.
Now, wait a minute.
Give the guy one Nickelodeon game, he morphs into his father. It's unbelievable.
Well, look, now we need Noah Eagle to say, if you ain't making tacos, I don't love you no more during a Clippers game.
I don't know. That's
if you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more.
If we could get Noah Eagle to say how many beers ago, about 1,000, as the Clippers seal a victory, that would be a big win for us.
The Wizards are now allowed to practice after battling COVID. The NBA wanted them to play the Bucks tomorrow. The team complained about the quick restart, and that game has now been postponed. And a North Carolina federal judge has ruled in favor of Zion Williamson in his battle with a former marketing agent who is suing him for breach of contract and $100 million. The judge invalidated that contract yesterday, saying it did not meet the requirements of the state's Uniform Athlete Agents Act. DA, back to you.
All right, let's cue the music here, Pete the Body Bellotti, and for our final turn around this thing with Dave Friedman and Mike Pacheco, who are the broadcast team, longtime broadcast partners. They're great. They go on the road. They do podcasts when they're on the road. The Bearded
Carcast.
The Bearded Carcast. I was about to say the Bearded Bird podcast. The Bearded Carcast. They're on the road with the Winthrop Eagles. They do a fun podcast. They go places to eat, etc. They're very funny together, obviously. Let's just play, instead of ranking them, let's just play again all of the clips here that we have in the system from last night. Either Pete on that end or Bogush on your end. You guys can decide, but I just want to hear all of them that we have from last night.
Yeah, no, that'll have to be Pete.
Okay, so Pete, roll them whenever you want them.
He told you he was from Turkey, but the next,
lived in Turkey for a year.
The next time you talk to him, can you find out if it was Ankara, the capital, or maybe Istanbul? Where in Turkey did he live?
Well, the bigger question is, do they have good burgers?
Right. 6:17 to go first down. 28-18. Winthrop has the lead. It's Corbin Telford.
And then where does the salt go?
A good
Winthrop
burger.
Feeling good, doing well. Up 12-7 to 13-27 to go in the first down. Vaudrin at the top of the key. He'll fire a triple. Yes! 43-28. Now, wait a minute. The Eagles closing in on a 15-0 start to the year and 20 consecutive victories. Up 43-28, 100 seconds into the second half.
Feeling good, doing well.
Back toward a cut. Harrison layup for PC. Good and a foul. Well, he has a weird waist.
How about with Vegas?
Zunick, left side, Vaudrin. Thought about a 4-3 today. Instead goes inside Claxton. Slam dunk! If you're not making tacos, I don't love you no more. 78-63 Eagles. Winthrop is going to win a 20th consecutive game. The Eagles are going to start the year 15-0, 12-0 in the Big South. An emphatic exclamation mark for the Winthrop Eagles. 55.
Who doesn't like tacos?
Love tacos, though it's not Tuesday.
How about with bacon?
19-14. This game has been back and forth. Winthrop had the 10-2 lead. Then it was 14-all, and now 19-14 Winthrop.
He looked at McCormick and said, "You like that, big boy?" That was a power move by Telford.
Oh no! I had one more I thought we played, and now I have to run it back. They had an emphatic with bacon at one point. For some reason, I thought that was already in there.
These guys are all stars. Oh. Absolute legends of the mothership forever. Jacob Wilkins, step aside. We have a new play-by-play voice of all things mothership. The broadcast team of Dave Friedman and Mike Pacheco should be calling every wienership, every chicken challenge, and every everything for us. I mean, we gave Jacob Wilkins a bit to do in Vegas, and he completely flamed out. We gave Friedman and Pacheco marching orders, and they won a championship three times over. They outkicked their coverage by seven different times. Incredible. That's what it is when it's an elite broadcaster that understands the duty of the job. I just hope that they remain employed after all that nonsense.
DA, do you think we can get them both to call the play-by-play of the dodgeballs being fired at me in a revolutionary costume?
Oh, that's a great one. That's an absolutely great one. I have to fly them up here, but it's worth it. It's worth the investment. Or just have them do it over Zoom. Too.
Right.
Oh, they're the best. All right, well, that was even better than a Mraz book report in some possible way.
Yeah.
That was even better.
Double win for me.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
So, we asked you guys today, what is the Colts' best quarterback solution now that Phillip Rivers retired? And the winner here, 50% of you, half of the vote, went to sign a free agent. 23% said draft a new quarterback at number 21. 16% said Jacoby Brissett. Only 10% said young Jacob Eason, a fourth-round pick of last year. In the wild card loss of the Bills, Phillip Rivers completed 27 of 46 for 309 and two touchdowns. According to NFL Research, he joined George Blanda as the only players 39 years or older to throw at least two touchdown passes in a road playoff game since 1950. So, did Brady get that this past week in New Orleans? Did he throw two?
No, he threw for 199, didn't he?
No, just two touchdown passes. What we're
oh, that's
for.
Right.
Not sure. No, he had one.
No, you're right. Two touchdowns. One to Fournette. One to
Mike Evans?
Doesn't matter. He had two and he ran for one.
Right. So now it's Phillip Rivers, George Blanda, and Tom Brady as the only players ever to be 39 years or older and throw for two touchdowns in a road playoff game since 1950. Either way, Rivers, not a Hall of Famer. You guys are loving the Super Dave clips. Just loving them. Alien OG tweets, I might start listening to these Winthrop Eagles games, and I don't even like college basketball. Headley tweets, Super Dave just made up for every boring segment he's ever had on the show with those calls in that game. I'm freaking dying over here.
And then where does the salt go?
The best. So we have one more clip that we're going to try to dig up maybe for tomorrow where there was an emphatic with bacon. And you thought maybe they even did the I would drop dead without those burritos, but we couldn't find that one, right?
Right. And I'm going to comb through. I'm actually just going to listen to the entire game again front to back today. So if you want to know what my day is going to be like, because I'm determined to make sure the listeners get this.
Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. The stunned to a news story was a couple went to Turks and Caicos. They were having such a wonderful time at this resort that the husband flew back home to bring their son back to the resort. In this time, mommy got a massage and then went home with Jorge. Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Something must be going on in the marriage as well, because if you're the wife,
you think?
I mean, you just, don't you just eat it at that point in time? Like, I had my one night stand with the hot masseuse yes. in Turks and Caicos.
So I will transfer you my energy. I will transfer my karma.
And hubby's coming back with my son, and I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to have a glow about me and act as though I've had the best vacation ever, but I'm not going to tell them. And then he's like, my wife eventually told me the masseuse seduced her.
Like, did she try to play the victim? Like, I was helpless.
This is a great way to stretch.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
You know, he has a Swedish accent. I couldn't stop
His hands were so strong and the oil was just so, so sensual.
Every white sandy beach the rest of his life is going to remind him of this.
Here's Johnny. He's here for a great vacation. Why is mommy so sad? What? What? Johnny, he had a great flight. He can't wait to go to the beach. Mommy, why are you crying right now? What are you saying? Oh no. Like Johnny like
Why's
bursts
your clothes
into,
all over the floor?
Into the suite. And like mommy's like, it's over. I slept with Jorge. He was
Sven.
Amazing.
You could do this with your partner at sure. home. Let's ride this energy out.
And you know, that there have to be, now that this has gone viral, other couples that have taken the trip where women have gotten massages there, that now there's a lot of infighting all over the world right now. What happened when you got a massage there?
Yeah. Who was it? Who was the masseuse? Who'd you get? Where'd you go? Every woman on this resort right now is like, right. You should go fly home and get our son. Yeah. You should, right. You should go. You just yeah, take,
I'll have what
take
she's
off.
Having.
Right. Have a couple of days.
Yes, this fire has just started, and we will not put it out.
What is he doing?
I don't really know that pose.
Think the poor husband.
I'm gonna stay back, and you guys just.
And every male is gathering
fishing
weapons
or something.
The poor husband asking why, going, is it because I have a weird waist?
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
We found out about the story because the husband came home and then wrote a review of the resort and said, water, sand, pool, and service amazing, but my wife had an affair with the masseuse, so I'm giving it 1 star. Pete the Body, you told me during commercial break it would get ugly if you found out that happened to your wife.
Oh, yeah, I'd be arrested. It would not be a good scene.
Basically, Pete said it'd be a murder scene in that masseuse's cabin on that resort.
I got the same thing in my ear, too. It's very graphic.
I'm going to get Bridget a massage for Mother's Day. See what happens.
The only thing that makes Bilotti more mad than Mraz's lack of work and calls to the show is the idea of Sven the masseuse manipulating his wife's muscles.
While he had to go into the studio to work.
He won't be a masseuse anymore.
Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer, Pete the Body Bilotti, Andrew Caplet, Andrew Bogish. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.